there once again, and welcome to Musings on Golf, where today you will hear more great storytelling from the legendary Jim Nantz, who will be inducted into the PGA of America Hall of Fame tomorrow, November 8th, in Frisco, Texas. My name is Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host Bob Bubka. And Robert, how cool is it going to be for our listeners to hear from Jim Nantz about the role that PGA professionals and the PGA of America have played in his life?
Such a deserving honor for Jim Nantz. He's been a friend of golf for a long time. I mean, going way back to his collegiate days at University of Houston. Fred Couples was one of his roommates that he played a lot of golf with. And people say when they see Jim Nantz on air, on television, they say, wow, he seems very sincere. And I say it, and you say it too, Kelly, he is sincere. Jim Nantz, not only one of the greatest broadcasters of our generation, probably one of the nicest.
Well, there's no question about that. And Jim's life in golf, started as a young man. His parents took him on the road to see PGA Tour events. He fell in love with CBS. He wanted to be a broadcaster for CBS. He wanted to be a golf broadcaster for CBS. And that's exactly what happened. He loves the game. And you're right. He played it at Houston. He's carried it on. Yeah, we hear him on Sundays during the NFL season, Bob. We heard him for years and years with the NCAA tournament. But when I think of Jim Nantz, my first thought always is golf.
Yeah, mine too. I mean, he's tremendous at football. He's probably even better at basketball and football. But at golf is where he really shines, because there's a big love affair in the heart of Jim Nantz for the sport of golf.
And there's an emotional attachment for me as well. My father, Max Elbin, past president of the PGA of America, 50 years the head professional at Burning Tree Club outside of Washington, passed away in December of 2008. And the following year, the PGA annual meeting held in November of 2009 in New Orleans. And Jim voiced the video tribute for my dad. And Jim has been a longtime member at Burning Tree. And to hear Jim Nantz's voice telling the story of Max Elbin, needless to say, brought a rush of emotions. My mom was there that day. It was a very emotional, special day, one that I'll never forget. And Jim is just, he always brings that extra touch of class and style that elevates pretty much, Bob, anything he does.
Well, your dad, Max, certainly deserves to be in the PGA of America Hall of Fame. And the thing about Jim Nantz, he knew your dad. I mean, he saw him on a quite a regular basis. So when he says those words about dad's induction, you know that he really means it. And that kind of separates Jim Nantz from just about anybody else in this business.
And I thought it was fascinating, as our listeners are going to hear, when CBS regained the contract for the PGA Championship in 1991, it just so happened to be the greatest of coincidences with John Daly winning the PGA Championship, literally driving overnight to get to Crooked Stick outside of Indianapolis, goes on and wins. And Jim's story about watching John Daly at a football game the night before, again, is that type of inside info that you're really not going to get too many other places. It's a great story.
It really is. And John Daly winning one of the ultimate stories in PGA of America history, including his caddy at the time, by a fellow by the name of Squeaky Medlin, who was the regular caddy for Nick Price. But Nick couldn't make it because his wife, they were going to have another child. Nick WDs. They put John Daly in. He drives overnight. Price says, why don't you use Squeaky, John? He's a good caddy, and the rest is history.
One of the greatest, if not the greatest single incredible golf story ever, to have him driving all night at a golf course he'd never seen and go out and smoke the field. Hey, in addition to Jim, who is getting into the PGA of America Hall of Fame and the ambassador category. Past president Susie Whaley, the first female to hold the office of president of the PGA of America, is also going in. The late Kathy Whitworth is being inducted as well. What a legacy that lady left on the game of golf. And another friend of mine, Bob Dolan, longtime head professional at Columbia Country Club outside of Washington, D.C. Bill Strasbaugh was the longtime head professional before Bob was there, and he's going in tomorrow. So quite a class at the PGA's annual meeting in at their new headquarters in Frisco, Texas.
Yeah, and their new headquarters, something to see. I mean, if you're a lover of golf and you're anywhere near Frisco, just make a little detour and go see the campus, the modern campus of the PGA of America. It's absolutely outstanding, and it's really a tribute to golf, and that's what the PGA of America is all about.
Hey, one more call out before we go to the interview. I've got a good buddy here who I've mentioned before at the club where I play here in South Florida, Gordon Long. His son, Adam, is on the PGA Tour. Adam became the first player since 1992 to hit every fairway at a PGA Tour event. He did that this past week, 56 of 56, Bob. Brian Clarke was the last guy to do it. Now, I know that the golf course there, Tiger's course, the fairways were a little wider perhaps than a lot of others, but he hit every fairway over the 4 days. That's remarkable.
That really is remarkable. I don't care how wide the fairways are. 56 for 56. Wow. Job well done.
And we'll hear from Jim Nance right after these messages. We're delighted to welcome William & Harry as the newest sponsor of Musings on Golf. William & Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitted inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to williamandharry.com.
To outperform is to be better. This begins with trusting a golf ball you know will outperform every other. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to deliver longer distance, lower long game spin, more consistent flight, and unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, we are indeed honored to be joined by a true legend today. He's a member of the Sports Broadcasting Hall of Fame. And tomorrow night in Frisco, Texas, he will be formally inducted into the PGA of America Hall of Fame. Jim Nance, thanks so much for joining us here on Musings on Golf.
Well, hello, friends. First off, you're getting me nervous now as the countdown is underway to that big night. I'm very excited about it. It's a tremendous thrill for me being recognized by the PGA of America. It's an organization that has been a big part of my life. This is not anything I ever, ever thought would be a part of my life, would be getting recognized with the Hall of Fame award by them. But it means a lot to stand up and accept this from the 29,000 PGA professionals who are the lifeblood of our game in this country, so many of whom I've known and I've even worked for. So I go back to my earliest memories around the game, working for a PGA professional. It's been vital to me having the career that I have, and I'm grateful.
You know, Jim, I'm excited about you getting inducted because I think, along with you, that they really are the unsung heroes of professional golf, the PGA professionals. Most people don't realize a lot of them start their day maybe at 6 in the morning and end it at 8 at night. They're on the range. They're trying to help people to play better golf. And you being inducted is just going to shine a little more light, a little more positive light on the PGA of America.
Bob, I can't thank you enough because you teed me up on exactly what's in my head and what I want to be able to say tomorrow. When I was 13 years old, I got hired to work all the remedial things that were necessary behind the scenes for a PGA professional at Battleground Country Club in Freehold, New Jersey. His name was Tony Bruno. And I did the things you might expect a 13-year-old would do. And I did this for 5 years. Clean golf clubs after a round. Pick up the driving range. Charge the golf carts. Anything that needed to be done behind the scenes, I was there to help clean up. And that gave me access to be able to play the game. And it took the weight off of my parents of having the expense of trying to find a place for their boy who was hopelessly in love with the game. It gave him a chance to go, to play, to learn. But you know what I learned? More than I learned to be a better golfer, I learned how to work. I learned a work ethic. I learned what it's like, as you described it, to get there at 6 o'clock in the morning, to be on all the time. These PGA professionals, someone walks in, whether it's a public course or a private course, you've got to be on. That relationship, one-on-one, gets repeated throughout the course of a day, not for an 8-hour shift. We're talking 6 to 6, sometimes even longer. And if you're in the private golf sector, you have, depending on the club, you have 500 different bosses. You have to have a relationship with them all. You have to know what that member wants to talk about, what their story is, what their golf game's like, their family, what they're looking for as far as an experience when they show up to the club. So I learned people skills. I learned work ethic. And, you know, I got a front row seat to how the game is executed. And more than just the teaching part, which is what we sometimes talk about more than anything when it comes to these PGA professionals, it's way more involved than just being out on a teaching tee trying to give somebody a lesson. Sure, that's important, but it's all the little details that go into running those shops and that experience that it's endless, and they're tireless individuals, and I have nothing but great admiration for them all.
Let me explain just how great Jim Nance is at doing interviews. He answered my next question before I asked it. I mean,
sorry.
That takes a lot of talent, Jim Nance.
Sorry, Bob. You know, we've been on the same circuit for a long time, my friend. So we're channeling each other's thoughts, and we know where we're supposed to go next.
All right, let me throw a curveball in here. Why Nashville? I understand you live in Nashville now.
Yeah, I live in Nashville and in Pebble Beach. I live in Pebble.
Drop Pebble Beach on me. Go ahead.
For 11 years, and I'll be there. Well, pretty much every month I get back to my home there, and I spend the summers there. But I was born in North Carolina, where there's a great appreciation for the game. And I love being back in the South and just the kindness and the warmth. And then I had the proximity dilemma that was really becoming more and more tiresome for me. As I get every year a little bit more in a trying to recover from the grind, living in Pebble, commuting out of Monterey, and going to do a football game in Buffalo 1 week, and then New England the next, and then in Miami the week after that, and traveling cross country, be home for 2 or 3 days, and then go all the way back across the country again. It added up to over 500 hours a year in the air.
Wow.
In Nashville, I'm at about 150. What does that mean? That means I leave a day later. I get home a night earlier. I'm getting somewhere close to 60 extra days a year to be around my kids. And that was the driver for me. And that was important. That time I can't get back. It's the only currency that matters is time. I still have Pebble, a very big part of my life, but I'm loving it here in Nashville. People make it. They really make it here in terms of making it a special experience. The Nashvillians, there's a lot of warmth here and a lot of good golf, by the way, too.
We're not expected to see you up on the Grand Ole Opry stage.
I wish I could sing, man. I wish I could sing, Bob. My voice was made. Well, it wasn't made. I tried to make it. My voice is for narration. It's for calling golf tournaments and football games. But when I try to sing, even in the shower, it's off key, man. It's not close.
Well, we are thrilled to be joined by the great Jim Nance, who will be inducted into the PGA of America Hall of Fame tomorrow night at a very special ceremony in Frisco, Texas. Jim, the PGA of America has conducted the PGA Championship since back in, I believe it was 1919. But you'd be hard pressed to come up with a crazier, more dramatic PGA Championship than the very first one that you did with your great friend Ken Venturi, 1991 at Crooked Stick, and the folk hero of John Daly was born. What in the world was that like for your first time leading the broadcast?
We were first of all, we were thrilled to have it back. CBS had the PGA Championship before I was born back in the 50s, and then it went to ABC, and now it lands in our lap. And CBS's first return to the PGA Championship, we walked into one of the great stories ever for major championship golf. The ninth alternate, driving in the middle of the night to get there in time from Dardanelle, Arkansas, after Nick Price had to withdraw because Sue, his wife, went into labor and delivered their first child, a little boy named Gregory. And then all of a sudden you have this guy that no one really knows a ton about, who drives it longer than anyone had ever seen at that point. And, you know, he has a solid first round, shot 3 under. And then the story got bigger on Friday. It got gigantic on Saturday once it went over the CBS feed. And, I mean, it was storybook. It was storybook. And, you know, that's what we're in the business to do, is to tell the story and observe what we see and tell people what we see. Well, for storytellers, the John Daly story of 91 was about as rich and as exciting as any you could ever come up with, because no one had ever heard the story before. So it was a blank canvas. I'll give you one side note to that one, Kel. On Saturday night, there he was with the lead, and I had developed, as the week went on, a pretty good like relationship with him. I didn't know him before that week. So I asked him what he was going to do Saturday night. He said he was going to go to the Colts preseason game. Remember, we're out in Carmel, Indiana at Crooked Stick. The Colts were playing the Seahawks that night. And then he told me that someone had invited him to attempt a field goal between the first and second quarters. He could run out there during that commercial break and run out, because he was a place kicker in high school. Wow. He played football. He was a straight-on kicker. That had been written about in the Indianapolis paper. So I said, you mind if I come along? Come on out. I went to the game with John. And sure enough, on the eve of him winning the PGA Championship, he trotted onto the field and tried, I believe it was a 40-yard kick off of a tee, straight-on kick, and knocked it through. Now, if you think about today's player, if you had a lead of 54 holes, you haven't warmed up, and you're going to go out there and try a field goal and blow a hamstring, I mean, no one would even think about it. But this was just, again, adding to the magic, the lore that came out of this improbable story of John Daly.
It was a remarkable week. And then fast forward 32 years later to this past May, and you're front and center for the extraordinary triumph. And it wasn't a triumph in terms of actually winning the PGA Championship, but the Michael Block story at Oak Hill, the PGA of America professional, again, who in a lot of ways, Jim, just kind of comes out of nowhere. You're part of that scene, and then you get to call as improbable a golf shot on a Sunday afternoon as you'll ever find in a major championship.
His hole in one at 15.
Yeah.
At Oak Hill. Now, today's technology, and I think people will understand this. There used to be tape machines, and you had to cue them up, and you had to wait until you finished recording before you could go back and play the tape back. Well, the digital era now brought in where you could still be recording a moment, and you can go to it as it's still recording. Michael Block hit that shot about 4 seconds before we came out of commercial. So Seller Shy, our producer, said, Jim, we're coming to 15, and we're trying to get there live. Hold on, hold on, hold on. He's talking to himself, hoping Michael will wait. You'll have to say this was a moment ago. And it was truly. It was like 4 seconds ago. So I don't know exactly what I said, but it was, just to be fair, and I, you know, not to mislead the audience, I said, This was just a moment ago at 15, Michael Block. I didn't know what was going to happen. And it goes in the hole playing with Rory McIlroy. It was crazy bizarre. I still don't know what I said. I've never seen the clip again. But then to take that story to the 18th, he misses the green to the left side. Our tower is perched on the left side. His ball was at rest right below our tower.
A really tough shot, Jim.
Impossible. Kelly, I'm looking at it. There's no way you're getting up and down. You can try to run it through a bunker, but there's a big lip on it. There's no play here. I'm looking straight down at the lie, and it's spotty. It's been matted down. There's not really grass. There's half mud. There's half grass. You can't catch that thing and flip it up into the air, flop it up in the air. I mean, it's impossible. The best, most likely scenario is he's going to hit it thin, and maybe it stops on the far side of the green. Somehow, he showed the ease that, you know, like you've never seen before, and he landed it in the rough, and it trickled up and stayed short of the cup, which was also impossible. Then he made the putt to get into next year's PGA Championship at Valhalla, right on the number, tied for 15th. Top 15 in ties are in. Truly a Cinderella story.
I had a guy who on Thursday nobody knew, and then Sunday he's getting the largest ovation of anybody on the first tee, Jim. It was an unbelievable 4 days for that guy.
He kept thinking every day that there would be that 78, 79, and sure. You know, he would go back into the pack. You kept waiting for that. But come Sunday, because of the hole-in-one, because of the up and down on the 72nd hole, not to take anything away from Brooks Koepka, but I mean, he walked away almost as big a champion as Brooks was because of the long odds of a PGA professional competing at that level and pulling off those shots and pulling them off in the company of Rory McIlroy.
So three unbelievable events over the past 50 years. John Daly, we just discussed that. We had Michael Block. We discussed that. We had Jack Nicklaus winning his last Masters. What's the only common thread between all three of those unbelievable events in golf? You guessed it. Jim Nantz.
I was trying to figure out what it was, and then it came to me where you were going with that, Bob. Thank you. I had something to do with it. Hey, it's typical of my life. I've just been a very fortunate individual, but I love where you were going. I was thinking, wow, what is the common theme there? That's right. I was at all three of those.
I know.
And the one in 86, listen, the one in 86 at Augusta was 26 years old. And I tried to act like I belong, not being overconfident, but self-assured. But inside, I was thinking, what are they doing? How can they put me in this role? I was just in a dorm room a couple of years ago at the University of Houston. And I'm working with Summerall and Venturi and answering to the great Frank Cherkinian and Ben Wrights at 15, who could describe golf. I mean, he was just an incredible talent. Gary McCord was on that show. I mean, it was Bob Murphy, Steve Melnick, Tom Weisskopf. And I interacted with Tom on 16 when Jack got to 16. Again, I'm coming out of my skin. Jack's just eagled 15. And we went to one of those rare commercial breaks, and Frank said to me during that one-minute break, he said, talk to me very softly. Jimmy, we're going to come out to 16, and it's all yours, and the world's going to be watching. You were born to do this, son. You can do this. Just you don't have to talk all the time. But you can do this. I know you can. It was so comforting. He was so soft-spoken to me. And then all of a sudden, I hear him bellow out, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we're at 16. And we're back here at the 16th. And Jack Nicklaus coming off eagle. And then I went into the background of Jack at 16. When he had won in 63 for his first green jacket, he made birdie there. Of course, the epic matchup that he had back in 75 with Weisskopf and Miller. And I said, if anybody owns the 16th hole, it's Jack Nicklaus. And now I've taken him right up to the point where he's ready to take the club back. At CBS, Frank's edict was, you never talk over a golf swing. Just like when we're playing, you don't talk over someone's swing. So I laid out. And all of a sudden, Jack backed off the shot, started throwing grass up in the air. The winds had changed. Now I'm thinking, where do I go now? Maybe Frank's going to cut to another hole. But Frank had a keen sense of drama. He stayed right there. But he's got a young broadcaster that has kind of emptied the bucket. I didn't know what else to say, so I brought in Tom. Tom was down in Butler Cabin with Brent Musburger. And I said, Tom Weisskopf, you've known Jack Nicklaus most of your life. You followed him at Ohio State. You tangled with him many times. What in the world is going on right now in Jack Nicklaus's mind as he is in pursuit of this historic sixth green jacket? Something like that. I think I've embellished it a little bit with time, but you can look it up. But Tom gave me one of the great answers of all time. He said, Jim, if I knew what was going on in Jack Nicklaus's mind, I would have won this tournament three or four times myself. So
it was a classic line.
It was a classic line, Kelly. It was. And I thought, wow, okay, that's it. And now we got Jack back over the shot. As you know, it nearly went in. He hit it off the slope and it trickled down the slope. It looked like it was going in and it settled about 3 feet below the hole. And then eventually when he made the putt, I said, the bear has come out of hibernation. And, you know, I was just trying to get back to the Masters in 87. I didn't know I'd be there now 38 times over. But it was a thrill to be able to say my career at Augusta started with Jack Nicklaus's sixth green jacket. Jack's a great friend. Jack and Barbara, as you know, you guys have relationships with the Nicklaus family. They're incredible. And I'll never forget being there to see that all unfold.
You know, Jim, you used the word incredible, and going into the Hall of Fame alongside of you is going to be Kathy Whitworth. If one word I had to come up with to describe Kathy Whitworth, it would be incredible.
What she did, 88 wins. What a career.
What a nice person.
I had no idea. Listen, when I got the call from Seth Waugh that I was going into the PGA of America Hall of Fame, I couldn't believe it because I have so much respect for credentialed PGA of America golfers, people that are tied to this incredible organization. I've just been a broadcaster, a kid with a dream. I've gotten to know what the PGA professional really looks like. Max Elbin, over 50 years, I think it was 54 years of service at one club, beloved. There's so many stories that are like that out there across America. And then you got players like Kathy. Susie Whaley is being recognized and her remarkable career. So I'm touched. I don't know what I did to deserve it, but I sometimes think my whole life has kind of been that way. I'm grateful for all the good fortune and serendipity that's come into my life.
Wrapping up with the great Jim Nance here on Musings on Golf. Jim, final question from me, and I know you sat next to for so many years your dear friend, PGA of America professional, Ken Venturi, calling the action for CBS Sports golf coverage. Jimmy, I would imagine he would be very proud of his old pal being inducted into his association's Hall of Fame tomorrow night.
Well, you say that means a lot to me. I miss Ken. He passed away on my birthday 10 years ago. Our birthdays were 2 days apart. His was May 15th. Mine's May 17th. So on May 16th, we usually found ourselves at the Byron Nelson tournament. And we go celebrate our birthdays together. And I got to sit by his side for 18 years. The last thing I said to him, his last show was June the 2nd, 2002. We were at the TPC at Avenel Farms. And it was one of the great goodbyes in the history of the medium. I'm not talking about sports broadcasting. I mean, I'm saying like you could put Ken's goodbye up against Johnny Carson, Ed Sullivan, anybody. It probably was the best ever. There was a musical tribute to My Way, Frank Sinatra, who Kenny was very close to. At the end, they came out of that piece where seconds to go, he framed them up, and it was a two shot. And I said, for as long as I'm sitting here, you will always be by my side. which later became the title of a book I wrote about my father in his late stages of Alzheimer's. That's the first time that phrase ever left my lips. With that, Ken turned to the camera and just said, something about this incredible ride that he had had. And he said, thank you. One of the great gifts in life is for when people remember you, like I'm going to have tomorrow in Frisco, Texas. Thank you for remembering me. May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America. Tears streaming down his face. He turned. The two of us embraced. I later saw, you know, Frank, it wasn't Frank, it was Steve Milton at that time. The director stayed on that shot. And we're just hugging and sobbing. And they lingered on that shot for 3 or 4 seconds. And they dipped to black. The show was over. And that marked the end of a 35-year career as the lead analyst, the longest lead analyst in the history of sports television. I try to make him proud, Kelly, to answer your question. I still do. I have his golf cart at my home in Pebble Beach. That golf cart was special to him. It's not just a golf cart. It's a souped-up Bentley. It's what it looks like. It's over the top. And it's not something I necessarily would ever gone out and figured out to purchase something like that, but it had a lot of style, just like Ken. And when I drive it around Pebble Beach, I feel his presence. When I got the cart, I'll leave you with this. Inside, there's a glove compartment. There was the last golf glove that he had. It was folded over very neatly. Hmm. Okay? Got a golf glove, had a sleeve of Titleist golf balls, and had a USGA rule book. And to the right was a CD cartridge holder of Frank Sinatra's greatest hits. His cart has 12 speakers in it. And there was the best of Sinatra. It was Frank Sinatra's greatest hits. So when I drive around, I'm playing Sinatra because that's what Kenny was listening to. His glove, his last glove, his last sleeve of balls, and a USGA rule book are still right where they were when he died. And he's riding shotgun. And I'm driving Kenny around Pebble Beach golf links, keeping him alive. And it's every single time I do that, I think of him. I'll be thinking of him tomorrow night for sure.
Well, it's my job to wrap this up, and I'm at a loss for words. I got tears coming down my eyes. All I can say is we just had an interview with a Hall of Fame guy who's going into the PGA of America Hall of Fame tomorrow. Jim Nance, thank you so much.
I mean, tomorrow's going to be special, but it can't be any more special than it is talking to you two about it. So I'm grateful to you both, and I thank you both for your friendship. It means a lot to me. So thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on. I'm just very grateful.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance, and they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Well, Bob, so many great stories from Jim Nance, and I thought very touching the last story in regards to Ken Venturi and Mr. Venturi's golf cart. Ken may be gone, but with Jim leading the way and driving around, his spirit lives on for sure in Pebble Beach.
Yeah, it's quite amazing to hear Jim tell it in his own words. He had a unique relationship with Ken Venturi and owns his golf cart now, and when he drives around Pebble Beach, he's in that golf cart, and I'll be perfectly honest, brought a little tear to my eye. The profound effect that Jim Nance has when he tells a story.
Well, we thank Jim Nance very much for his time, and I know it's going to be a special time for him being inducted into the PGA of America Golf Hall of Fame. Next week, Tripp Davis, an outstanding golf course architect, will be joining us. Bob and I talked to him a short time ago, and he's got some great stories, including one about the legendary Byron Nelson. Kelly Elbin, along with my good friend Bob Bupkis, signing off, Musings on Golf.